Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. One of the hardest facts we all confront is when we have to watch our families, our culture, or our country disintegrate before our eyes and dealing with the continual disappointment. But on today's show, we encourage you to continue on and to get through those mucky times. We're going to show you what you can do while you wait.
I'm an American.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to Homefront. Today we have Tricia Lott Williford. Tricia writes, blogs, and speaks about faith in the face of loss and hope when the miracle isn't yours. So welcome, Tricia.
Thank you, Cynthia. I'm so glad to be with you today.
Well, I am thrilled to talk with you. You start your book called Just You Wait, and you put periods between each word to make sure we know there sometimes we have to wait,
right?
And wait long and slow. So you start off in the very beginning telling us your story of Peter and what it means to long for something to happen. Can you tell us that story?
Yes, I can. That story is so dear to my heart. So the bottom fell out of my world, Cynthia, about eight and a half years ago now. I was married to a terrific man, and we lived in the suburbs and had our two kids and our minivan and the life that we wanted. And he got really sick, and really sick really fast. And I took him to the hospital, and the doctors thought that he had the flu, and they said he won't die from this, but he's going to feel like it. And they were wrong, and he died the next morning. And he was just sick for 12 hours, and as I said, they thought he had the flu, but he had an infection in his bloodstream that attacked his heart and his lungs. And he was 35 and healthy and suddenly taken from us very quickly. And I was 31 years old. And my boys were 5 years old and 3 years old. And suddenly I found myself as a widowed single mom of two little boys who were not yet in kindergarten. And I began a long season of waiting, and I was waiting for many things. I was waiting for the sun to shine in my heart again. I was waiting for the end of winter that seemed to last for 2 years. I was waiting for God to answer. I was waiting for, as the time stretched on and I began to come out of this 2 years of winter and the depression that seemed to linger, and grief has some serious staying power. And as that time that season began to come to a close, my boys were desperately wanting a new dad, as they called him, the new dad. And we were praying for him and asking the Lord for this miracle. And God brought him to us. I was a Starbucks barista, and I poured Peter's coffee one night, and he kept coming back. And as he says, if you buy enough cups of coffee, you get a wife. And so he is my favorite miracle. And Peter and I were riding along in the car one day, and I said, I've been thinking about the process of waiting and how I really feel like it comes down to three things. Like, first, there's this longing. You're separated from what you really want. And that can be a death or a loss or a bankruptcy or a dream that you're waiting to come true, or freedom that you're waiting for, or you're waiting for, you know, to pay off this giant bill or something like that. So it begins with longing, and then you go into the season of becoming, where something is becoming, something is changing. Maybe that's when the seeds are beginning to take root in the soil, and something is becoming, and it's happening underground. You can't see it yet, and you can't feel it, and it feels like the longest wait. But something is becoming, and you are becoming. You're becoming something different and someone different in that process. And then after the longing and after the becoming comes this awakening, where you then realize, like, oh, this is what was happening. I finally have come into what I wanted so badly. It's now finally mine. Or sometimes you realize, oh, the answer is going to be no, I'm not going to get this. And you realize that God was with you through the process, and you come to this awakening of who he was. And so we were driving along in the car, and I presented this to him and just said, you know, I'm so excited about it because I feel like this could be the outline for a book, and I could really think through these three parts. And I presented this idea to him, and he said, no, I'm not feeling it. And I thought, how can you not be feeling it? Like, I just presented you with this three-part outline, and they all even end with ing. Like, this is the most perfect thing. And we can break down every part of waiting, everything we've ever waited for, into this three-part process. And he said, it's not like that for everybody, Tricia. That's not how it was for me. And I began to kind of explore the parts of his story that I knew with him. And we talked about what it was like for him as an alcoholic, with a 38 years of addiction and waiting to be set free. And I asked him if he would let me tell his story, and he said yes. So this story incorporates my wait, but also his. Peter actually ended up in jail for a season and waiting for that freedom to be set free from addiction, but also literally set free from behind bars. So we explore, the book is very raw and tender and transparent, and we explore waiting from a lot of different angles. So that's the heart of it.
A lot of people have a family member or even a friend who struggles with alcoholism. And I had a brother myself who was an alcoholic. And we waited and we longed and we were believing that we read a book that said he's going to hit rock bottom. And then when he gets to the bottom, he'll decide to turn over a new leaf. And so we patiently waited, believing, hoping. You know what? That day never happened. He never got over his alcoholism. He died last year from cirrhosis of the liver. So Peter had a great story. And we all love happy stories. I'm so happy. 38 years? Yes, he can do it. Anybody can do it in any number of years. But my brother couldn't do it. And so all of the hope, and we love to have hope. I love your idea of having hope that God's going to show up, because that's our hope after all. But what happens if he doesn't show up, or at least not in the way we were hoping for?
Oh, that's such a big question, and something that I really wanted to dive into with grace and a tender heart as I wrote the book, because you're exactly right, Cynthia. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes we don't get a yes this side of heaven. And so what do we do? What do we do when that's the case? And I think in moments like that, I think of the story when, when I believe it was a paralyzed man who came to Jesus and said, if you are willing, you can heal me. Will you heal me if you are willing? And I had always misunderstood that. I thought willing meant want to. If you want to heal me, I know that you will right now. And as I dove into that story, I realized that actually willing means, if this is part of the biggest story that you are telling, then I know that you can heal me. If this is part of your grand plan, I'm going to ask you to do this for me right now. And I realize that willing has a very different meaning. I think of willing like, are you willing to have coffee with me? Or when I say to my sons, are you willing to obey? Are you willing to apologize for this? And it really is a question of want to. But in this story, when he presents it to God, to Jesus, he's saying, if this is part of your will, of your master plan. And there are times when what we want the most is not part of his master plan. It is not part of what he wants to give us. And Cynthia, I'm so sorry for that loss that your family has experienced, that deep weight of praying for your brother's healing and then seeing that his life came to an end without healing. And I will never minimize that pain, and I will never negate that for you or for anyone listening right now. I think that when we rush in to turn on the lights real quick for somebody because they're sad and we're ready for them to be happy again, or when we offer some kind of joy, some kind of empty happiness in their sadness, it can feel just like when somebody turns on the lights too fast when you're in a dark space. It hurts, and it hurts your eyes, and you want to shield yourself from that. And so I am careful not to do that, to say, oh, but God is faithful, but God is good. What I do know is that I can't convince anyone that he is good, but I trust the sovereign hand of Jesus, because I also trust the sweetness of Jesus, that he's been in that space. And he is the lily of the valley, and he is near to the brokenhearted, and he is close to those who are crushed in spirit. And when he says no, he is faithful to show up in a different way. And when we give him our honesty, and when we give him our sadness, and when we give him our anger or our frustration or our impatience or our brokenheartedness, he gives us himself. So that's what I would say to the listener right now who was like, yeah, but this isn't going to change for me, or it didn't change for me. Sometimes the blessing in it is believing that God is still good, believing that he is for you, even when the answer is not yes.
Well, you have a chapter called Ridiculous Waiting, and I know we can all handle wait, especially when you're talking to toddlers and children, little children. They have to learn one of the most common things we say is you have to wait for dinner, wait for your toy, wait for we're getting ready to go out, whatever. So we are familiar with waiting, but there is a point when it becomes ridiculous. So would you please tell us your story about when you went to the Department of Motor Vehicles?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I went, Peter and I had just gotten married, and it was time for me to change my name. And that is a very intentional process, and it takes a while. And you have to really want to change your name. It doesn't just happen, and it's not like changing your relationship status on Facebook. Like, there's a process. And so I needed to get a new social security card, and I needed to get a new driver's license. And I had committed one day of doing this, and I learned that one day is not enough days to get this done. So first I had gotten a new social security card, and then I went straight to the DMV to get my new driver's license. And I went up to the counter, and I got my little ticket, which is very similar to the one that you'll see on the front of the cover of the book, this little blue ticket. And I believe my number was like 474, and they were on number 231. Like, it was something really like, oh, we've got a long wait. We've got a long wait in front of us. And so I did hear them call my name, but they were calling me from a different room that I was in. They said, you need to come to suite letter D or something like that. I mean, let's just be honest with ourselves. Are any of these really suites, really? You know,
no.
Like this. So they called me to, and I heard them call my name over the PA system. Number 474, come to suite letter D. And I'm like, I don't even know where I am in this building. I got to find a different suite. So it turns out it was across the hall. As I'm going, I hear them call my name again. And I show up in this other separate room where there are much fewer people. And I step up. I see that she's on number 474. There's just me and this woman. Like, the room is now empty. There's just me and the woman behind the counter. And she's tapping away at her computer. And I stepped up and said, you know, I was number 474. And she said, I deleted your number. And I said, why? She said, I had to call you twice. I said, I was across the hall. I came immediately. I came as soon as you called me. Well, I called you twice and you did not come quickly. So I deleted your number. And I said, well, I'm here now. Can we do this now? And she gave this exasperated sigh and was so frustrated that I was not complying with her process. And she said, oh, I suppose we can. And then she took a look at my social security card, realized that I had only gotten it that morning. And it turns out that they need 24 to 48 hours before they can make changes and in their system. And so then they sent me home, and I had to come back and start the entire process all over again. And it even unfolded with, you know, in the book, I talk about them very publicly asking my weight and asking how you know, your eye color, your hair color, your weight. Do we have to do this right here? Do we have to do this out loud? Like, honestly, can you just throw me a bone? Like, yes, everything is going to stay the same, even if I lied the first time. Like, yes, let's just keep it all the same and move forward. So that chapter is about ridiculous waiting, because sometimes, as you said, Cynthia, there are times when we're really good at waiting and we can be patient because we can feel like there's something more powerful, something bigger going on that maybe we can't see. But there are other times when the waiting just feels ridiculous and it just feels like there is no reason for this. And I think in situations like that, patience is like a muscle that you learn to stretch. And when you can stretch the muscle in ridiculous waiting and get good at it in those moments of being patient, when it seems to be without purpose and there seems to be no reason for it, then in the larger seasons, when we have to wait for bigger, harder things, we can get good at that too, because we've stretched the muscles.
Well, God has a reason for all of us to get muscles stretched. Let me top your story with my shower door story.
Oh, let's hear it.
I went to Lowe's to buy some glass shower doors for my house, and they had these nice doors. Great, bought them, took them home, went to install them, and through nobody's fault, one of the shower doors slipped out of my husband's hand. Those doors do that sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And it broke into a million pieces, and we felt really bad. And no problem. I called the manufacturer, told them what happened. They explained we can buy a replacement door. All I have to do is take this case number to Lowe's, and they'll order me another one. So I took the case number to Lowe's, was confident they'd ordered me another one. They said it'd be 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, I called to see if it was there, and they said, no, they don't have any record of the order, because I was supposed to have paid for it first. But nobody asked. They didn't ask me to pay for it so at the time. So now I paid for it, waited 2 weeks, and it still wasn't there because they forgot to order it. 2 weeks later, they remembered to order it, but they ordered the wrong part. 2 weeks later, I mean, this went on 2 months by now.
Oh, my goodness.
And the worst part is, we finally got the door, and then I had to wait 2 more weeks for the professional contractor to have time on his schedule to come in and install it, because by this point my husband wants a professional to help.
Yeah.
Right. So the professional contractor's here, we're all ready to go, slice open the box, and the contractor explained to us that it's the wrong door. The holes won't line up. It's for a 60-inch shower, not a 48-inch shower.
Oh, no.
So I called the company and told them they shipped me the wrong door, and they said they would ship me the right door now, and this time they'll ship it directly to my house. So it was supposed to have been in St. Louis more than a week ago. And you know what's sweet about having tracking information is with computers, you can watch it travel across the country. Yes. So it showed it was picked up in Philadelphia. It showed it went to Harrisburg. It showed it went to Mechanicsburg. And then it showed it went to St. Louis. So the next step is for us to call and make an appointment, because I don't want to risk having them deliver it and us not be home.
Right now you're still waiting for it, Cynthia, today? You're still waiting for it.
Well, I called a week ago and I said, now the tracking information, instead of showing where it's going, they put this yellow caution triangle up and it said exceptional. And so I called UPS. They said they have no idea where the door is. They put out an APB twice, and nobody knows where the door is. But I said, well, excuse me, but it shows that it made it to St. Louis. Maybe I can come to your facility and look through all your boxes. And they said, no, no, no. Only the paperwork made it to St. Louis. The shower door did not.
Oh, no.
So I'm waiting now for them to ship another door because the logistics department has determined that the door is lost. It has been officially declared lost. And the saddest part is I only have one bathroom. So having no shower door, it's not like a cosmetic thing where it just won't look pretty. I need a shower door.
It's true. You've gone past the point of want at this point. It's a need.
So what is God trying to teach me through this ridiculous waiting? Give us the story. What am I supposed to learn by this?
Oh, for heaven's sake. Are you kidding me? That is a question of the ages, Cynthia. What is God trying to teach you through this? Okay. Well, the only thing that comes to my mind right now is grace. He is trying to teach you, perhaps, that people make mistakes. And this is an opportunity to be kind and generous with the people who have made this mistake. But honestly, maybe he's trying to teach you to take sponge baths. I don't know, Cynthia. I don't know.
Just you wait.
Just you wait. That's right.
So Twyla Paris wrote a song that really describes how I feel. It's called Every Heart That Is Breaking. And in it, she has a line, like a patriot with no country. And we all have moments of heartbreak. No, I mean, you had a horrible heartbreak with your husband dying. For me, it's watching the country move away from God. Mm-hmm. I went on a trip over the weekend. I was on my way driving through Louisville, Kentucky. And of all surprises, I never realized I'm trying to just get on the highway. That's all I'm trying to do is find my way to the highway. And they had a statue of a naked man. And it's 30 feet tall, penis and everything, right in your face. I mean, butt cheeks. I mean, it was beyond crude. And I felt like it was a sad sign of the times that we think that's okay. Mm. So I posted something on Facebook about the 30-foot tall naked man in the downtown Louisville, and why must we inflict this on everybody? The surprise to me is not as much the statue as much as it's hearing my nice Christian pre-selected Facebook friends push back on my comment and not even understand, telling me go home, quit. One person said something very hurtful. He said, this is why Christians can't get elected to public office because they make an issue out of stuff like this. I don't even know what country we live in anymore. And the worst part is I feel so powerless to change it. It's a cultural tsunami that is bigger than what any one person can hold back. So there are a lot of people who listen to our show even who are equally heartbroken watching the country we grew up in go into tatters. What do we do when we're heartbroken?
What an important question. Well, one of the things that I have found is it helps a lot to put a pen to the page. And that can happen in a number of ways. Certainly, you may have listeners right now who are thinking, well, oh, great, another writer who wants me to become a journaler. This is not who I am. But I would assert that I have two different ideas of ways that we can process our heartbreak. One is by writing letters. And you can write letters, certainly, politically speaking, you can write letters to your representatives. But you can also write letters to ideas. Write a letter to freedom. Write a letter to morality. Write a letter to ideas, to abstract ideas, and get your heartbreak out on the page. Sometimes it can be to a real person. In my season, while the boys and I were waiting for the new dad, I wrote letters to Peter, and I didn't know his name yet. But I wrote letters to him so that I had somewhere to put to channel all of this anticipation, to channel my brokenheartedness. And I had a place to put all this stuff, all this emotion that I was wading through. I wrote letters to my children when I was wanting to become a mom. I have two babies that are in heaven, and I still have the letters that I've written to them. And sometimes I still write to them, because sometimes that's a great way to channel the heartbreak and to learn about it. And sometimes I think that we really need to begin by being honest with ourselves, by getting our emotions out in front of us, so that then we can also be honest with God. And that allows him then, I think, to say, thank you for this canvas. Yes, this is something I can work with. I just needed your honesty first. And another way that I think that we can put the pen to the page is with Mark Batterson wrote a great book called The Circle Maker. And he talked about praying for big things and circling them over and over and over again. And I have done that. I have taken on that discipline. It has transformed my prayer life. And I have a notebook that is filled with big things that I'm asking God for. And I begin each day with circling them. And the circle itself doesn't do anything, but it gives me something to do with my hands and reminds me of the fact that it's kind of like circling the walls of Jericho. Like, I'm doing it again. I'm doing it again. And as you continue to circle it, your lines grow thicker. And the circle grows stronger, and you begin to see that you've circled this in faithfulness and in loyalty and with fortitude. And it can begin to be a reminder of, I'm praying for this. I'm going to keep praying for this. I've prayed for this 94 times now. I can't stop now. I'm going to continue to pray for it. And it allows us to continue to channel our thoughts, to open our hearts, to be honest, and to practice faithfulness on our own, even when our hearts are broken.
How do you know when you're asking for something that's too big, or your odds of getting that one are pretty slim because it's just so fantastic? I give us your ideas of what you're praying for.
Well, sometimes it does feel like something that's really too big. Sometimes I love to lay those before the Lord because he loves to show off. And so I love to give him an opportunity to do that. And I have things that I'm praying for, things like, for example, there are prayers that I will never stop praying for, like the wisdom of my children. The Lord says that if we ask for wisdom, he will say yes. And so even before they have an awareness to ask the Lord to give them a teachable spirit and a wise heart, I'm praying that for them, knowing that the Lord is hearing that. And I will pray that for them for all of their days. I will forever and always pray each day that the Lord will give them wisdom. So there are things like that. There are other things like, I pray for my books to land in the hands of the right people at the right time. That is something I may not even actually know the answer to. I may not ever actually know who's getting the books, but I know that the Lord is a master networker and he's putting things out there. There's a giant bill that my husband and I are trying to pay off, and I'm asking the Lord to help us pay that debt. And right now it feels insurmountable, but I believe that, I mean, he has done greater things than to write a giant check and to pull things together like that. So there are, you know, I'm praying for a friend's husband who he seems to not want to be married anymore. And I'm praying him back home, praying for the health and safety of their marriage and their children and their family. So things that feel enormous. I have a sign in my home that says, you never know what God can do until God's the only one who can do it. And so those honestly are the prayer requests that I most enjoy circling and that I most enjoy laying before the Lord. The ones that I think, listen, the only way this is going to happen is if God does it.
So give us some marching orders on how to get out of the ditch. There's probably somebody listening to the show who feels like I do. Someone who is in a broken down car on the side of the highway, watching other cars speed by and maybe waiting for a tow truck. What do you say to those people?
Wow. Well, I would say to those people who are waiting that sometimes the best thing we can do, we have many choices in our wait. One of the things that we can do is to distract ourselves, distract ourselves from the actual weight, that when you feel like nothing is changing in your own path and you feel like you can't stop looking at the clock and you feel like this class is never going to be over and you just feel like life is moving at such a slow pace, stop thinking about what you're waiting for and distract yourself with the joy of serving someone else. Find someone else who is waiting and serve them, and you might be the answer to their prayer today. Look for ways that you can stop looking at the clock and start looking at the world. Look at other things that are happening that you can delight in. Look at the world is a giant place and it has a lot going on in it that may have nothing to do with what you're waiting for. So give yourself the gift of distraction and think about something else and serve someone else and try to be the answer to someone else's prayer and let your path cross theirs.
Well, thank you. We all are on our way to somewhere. We don't maybe all know where it is. I had a dream last week that I was getting ready for surgery and they were going to be amputating one of my limbs. And I don't remember which limb they were going to cut off. It was either an arm or a leg. And the frustration was, when you think about it, it's not being able to change things. If, you know, it's like the serenity prayer is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change and the courage to change the things I can. But sometimes the worst place to be is when we can't do a single thing about it. Mm. So, I mean, certainly with your first husband's story, you probably felt very powerless, like there was nothing you could do to get yourself out. Thankfully, God had mercy and he pulled you out of it. Give us one last piece of advice you want everybody to realize as they are sitting there and you say, just you wait. What are we waiting for?
Well, I think that there are three layers to that, this concept of just you wait. The first one is that if you're waiting, it's because we all do. Everybody has to. Everybody has to wait. We wait in waiting rooms. We wait in line. We wait in the post office. We wait for a leader to take office. We wait and we wait and we wait and we wait. And so if you're in the waiting room right now, it's because we all have to take our turn there. We all have to wait. The second is there are things that you can be doing while you're waiting right now. And there are ways that you can begin. Like, think about Noah. When God asked him to build the ark, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. But Noah got busy. He got busy with what was in front of him. He got busy with the tools and with the equipment and the measurements that he had so that when it was time, he was ready. And I love how Abraham Lincoln said, I will study and I will prepare. And when my time comes, I will be ready. And if you spend your time waiting well with a mentor, with learning something new or headed in the direction that you want to go in, who can you learn from now? What book can you read? What podcast can you listen to? What class can you take while you are waiting so that when your time comes, you can say, look out, world, I am ready to shine. Just you wait. I have waited for this moment and I'm ready. The third thing that I would say about the wait is to continue to choose to believe. I believe that trust is a choice, and you can choose to believe that God is in this. And you can choose to believe there is so much that's happening underground, behind the scenes, that you cannot see yet. And God is going to reveal, either on this earth or in the world to come, he is going to show us what he had in mind. He's going to show us what the master plan was. And he's going to say, oh, I had just this in mind for you. Just you wait. And sometimes we feel powerless and sometimes we feel frustrated and we feel impatient. But when we can remind ourselves of those things, that everybody waits, that there's work to be done in the waiting and that God is in this too, that's where the answers come from.
Excellent point. Thank you so much. This has been delightful. I think you've got a message that people need to hear, and it definitely should inspire all of us because, yeah, life has its crummy moments, and without a way to process it or make sense out of it, it is hard to make sense out of some of the most perplexing experiences, but you certainly have helped us a lot. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a delight, Cynthia. Thank you for having me.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week, and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.